It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I don't know if we're close to the deal. This should be the easiest deal that I've ever seen. We're talking about border security. Who can be against it?
What we don't want to do is waste taxpayer money on a vanity project that's ineffective.
Border security ought to be driven by the experts, not by the political whims of a campaign promise where Trump said the wall was going to be built and was going to be paid for by Mexico.
It's common sense. What we're talking about is common sense.
It's just a vanity project. Just keep that in mind. It's just something. It was a campaign promise. The security at the border and the wall. It's just all about Donald Trump. It has nothing to do with the American people and their safety. It's just all smoke and mirrors, you understand. Except that this morning, Griff Jenkins did a report on Fox and Friends. Let's listen.
Good morning. At 5 a.m., the social media advertisement was that at 5 a.m. they would depart San Pedro Sula, and this is the new caravan. We are marching with it right now. You can see in front of us, it's a few hundred people. We'll spin backwards. You can see a little bit behind us. This is a gentleman that's actually injured. He's still going to make this long, arduous journey of more than 3,000 miles, pretty much, when it's done. You can see already what we saw in the first one. Look across the street. They're starting to run across. They're going to go about 200 miles west across Honduras, guys, and then they'll have to go 200 miles north through Guatemala to get to the southern Mexico border, where Mexican officials have said that they will be met with resistance if they try and cross illegally in there, and then, of course, 2,000 more miles to get to the U.S. border as we continue to find our way through rain, mud, already a challenging trek, and we've only gone about a quarter of a mile. But I told them, did they think they were going to get into the United States based on what they saw happen to the last caravan? And they said, we heard a lot of people got in. However, the president, President Trump, that is, sending a strong message yesterday that they will not be let in. And he's not backing down from building that wall. Here's the president.
They're forming a new caravan in Honduras. We need strength. Right now, we have weakness. Because I said I'll build the wall and I'm going to build the wall. I will never, ever back down.
And of
course, that's enough of Griff's report. You get the point. And so there are more coming. We knew that already, but now it's a specific caravan that Griff is with. It's a vanity wall, though. Remember that. It's a vanity project. It's just a campaign promise. It has nothing to do with the American people. And of course, Fox was boasting. Yeah, I think kind of last night on Special Report about an ABC Wall Street Washington Post a survey that showed that most Americans oppose the wall. You know what? I don't believe that. I'm sorry. Why in the world would we believe a Washington Post ABC poll? It depends on how you ask the question and who you poll. You can make a poll say anything. So I really don't believe that most Americans oppose some kind of border security. I don't believe that. So yeah, put that down in the scientific category. Sandy doesn't believe that poll. But let me just give you a few more pieces of information this morning. There's an interesting article by Paul Sperry this morning. It's about what's happened in El Paso, Texas. He says, when charges of racism and xenophobia fail, Democrats' fallback argument against President Trump's proposed border wall is that it simply won't work. So why waste billions building it? Tell that to the residents of El Paso, Texas. Federal data show a far less imposing wall than the one Trump envisions, a two-story corrugated metal fence first erected under the Bush administration already has dramatically curtailed both illegal border crossings and crime in Texas' sixth largest city, which borders the high-crime Mexican city of Juarez. In fact, the number of deportable illegal immigrants located by the U.S. Border Patrol plummeted by more than 89% over the five-year period during which the controversial new fence was built. And, of course, there's more to the article than that, but we'll put that on our Facebook page so you can share it with your friends. This town is proof that Trump's wall can work. And then there's an article from Daniel Greenfield. Daniel's been our guest, so is Paul. So Daniel writes this, how the border crisis caused a crisis 2,500 miles away in Maine. 2,500 miles away, Portland, Maine is experiencing a crisis that redefines the nature of the problem and whom it impacts. Illegal border invaders aren't just from this continent. Anyone who can fly into South America and make their way up to Mexico has a shot at crossing the border and invading America. Portland shelters are overloaded by illegal immigrants from sub-Saharan Africa who crossed the border and then kept right on going to one of the coldest but most profitable parts of the country. Portland, like many areas in Maine, attracted migrants because of the generous social safety net that had been set up to help the local population deal with turbulent economic times. Hundreds of African migrants who illegally crossed the border are now crowding Portland's homeless shelters, which are meant to protect local residents from the cold, but have instead been overrun by foreign migrants who have taken over the system and pushed the progressive city to the edge. Daniel has a ton of things in this article I'd love to share with you. Let me just skip to this, though. A 2013 survey found that 50% of the individuals in the shelter program, because Portland's very, very cold and people really cannot stay out on the streets, 50% of the shelter system in 2013 were refugees, immigrants, asylum seekers, or other foreigners. And of the 509 residents, 129 were Iraqis, 89 were Somalis, 47 were Sudanese, and then there were Afghans and Eritreans. Now it's 2018, 86% of the people in the shelter system are immigrants. By the end of the year, the number had climbed to a horrifying 90%, with Maine families almost crowded out entirely. So now enter the Islamic Society of Portland, which has formed Maine, the Maine Immigrant, they haven't formed it. There is a separate organization, Maine Immigrant Access Sector, which is a vector for the social problems plaguing Maine. Maine, M-A-I-N, is mostly oriented towards Somalis. Its team is entirely Muslim and almost entirely Somali. It's typical of the vast social services infrastructure that has been set up to care for the migrant population. And his point is, now the people who are really in need in Maine, who these shelters were intended to help, the citizens of Maine, the American citizens of Maine, are being pushed out of the shelters completely. And of course, there's more repercussions than that. So it's affecting Maine, and you could go and you could fill in the blank with other communities. Could you not? Are you not seeing it? Some of you are not. I know that. Some of you are not seeing this. Washington, D.C. has been looking like a third world country a couple of decades now, and it's only getting worse. So it's commonplace to me to feel like I'm in another country. But it's happening in the middle part of the United States more and more. So here's a story by Rachel Bovard. So you wonder, well, what's happening? The Democrats, 30 of them and their families, are in Puerto Rico having a vacation on the beach. And yes, they say it's a working vacation, but at $400 a night paid for by lobbyists and I guess the little island of Puerto Rico, they're having a very good time partying. We saw Bob Menendez out on the beach in a swimsuit. So that's what they're doing, at least a lot of them are doing. But what are the Republicans doing? Rachel Bovard, this is the 25th day of the shutdown, by the way. Rachel is one of the best in terms of following what Congress is doing on this. So she says that Nancy Pelosi refuses to pass any funding at all. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has washed his hands of the matter, telling Trump to work it out with Chuck Schumer while he moves the Senate onto other topics. Predictably, both chambers clocked out for the weekend on Thursday afternoon when senators and House members make the rounds on the upcoming Sunday shows, wringing their hands about the shutdown. Somebody might ask why they worked less than 3 days this week. Apparently, the crisis at the border and the resulting government shutdown are an emergency to everyone except the people responsible for addressing it. And then Rachel goes on to, there are a lot of things I could say, but I'm going to end with that. We'll put this on our Facebook page, too. Trump is right. Congress needs to do its job. They need to do their job. The president shouldn't have to file an emergency order to get this thing done. And Mitch McConnell should not be allowed to, you know, one point that Rachel makes is that a Republican senators would be happy for him to pass an emergency order. It would take the problem off their table. They wouldn't have to take the blame for it, and they don't have to do anything about it. And then the Democrats would be happy for that, because then they could blame and excoriate the president for using an executive order to push his pet project. So there you go. Let me just tell you, there is one working group in the House of Representatives that deserves our praise, and that's the House Freedom Caucus. And tonight they're holding what's called a special order on wall funding. What is special order? It's a time when it's like a series of 1-minute speeches, and they can invite other people to come down into the well and make those speeches. Members can ask for 1-hour chunks, and they can even give longer speeches. Some attribute the last special order that Freedom Caucus did as part of the reason why President Trump stuck to his wall deal. So tonight, if you're watching C-SPAN and you might want to do that, you would want to see what they're going to be doing. I'm sure I'll be talking about it tomorrow. I have to read this article before I run out of time. This is published in the Daily Caller. This is jaw-dropping. I just read it this morning, and the title is, "I'm a Senior Trump Official, and I Hope a Long Shutdown Smokes Out the Resistance." We'll put this on our Facebook page, too, because I'm sure I won't be able to finish all of it, but I want to read this to you. "As one of the senior officials working without a paycheck, a few words of advice for the president's next move at shuttered government agencies: lock the doors, sell the furniture, and cut them down. Federal employees are starting to feel the strain of the shutdown. I'm one of them. But for the sake of our nation, I hope it lasts a very long time, till the government is changed and can never return to its previous form. The lapse in appropriations is more than a battle over the wall. It's an opportunity to strip wasteful government agencies for the good. On an average day, roughly 15% of the employees around me are exceptional patriots serving their country. I wish I could give competitive salaries to them and no one else. But 80% feel no pressure to produce results. If they don't feel like doing what they're told, they don't. Why would they? We can't fire them. They avoid attention, plan their weekend, schedule vacation, their second job, their next position. Some do this in the same position for more than a decade. That's their workday. Errands for the sake of errands, administering, refining, following, and collaborating on process. Process is your friend, is what delusional civil servants tell themselves." And he goes on to explain how process creates jobs, slows everything down, and makes you look like you're busy, but you're not. "A saboteur is peddling opinion research, tasking their staff on pet projects, and pitching wasteful grants to their friends. Most of my career colleagues actively work against the president's agenda. This means I typically spend about 15% of my time on the president's agenda and 85% of my time trying to stop sabotage, and we have no power to get rid of them until the shutdown." And so he says, "Now, due to the lack of funding, many federal agencies are now operating more effectively from the top down on a fraction of their workforce." He says, "The nature of the big administrative bureaucracy is to grow to serve itself. I watch it and fight it daily. When the agency is full, employees held liable for poor performance respond with threats, lawsuits, complaints, and process in at least a dozen offices, taking years of mounting paperwork with no fear of accountability, extending their careers while no real work is done. Do we succumb to such extortion? Yes. We pay them settlements. We waive bad reviews, and we promote them. Many government agencies have adopted the position that more complaints are good because it shows inclusion in, you guessed it, the process. When complaints come, it's cheaper to pay them off than to hold public servants accountable. The message to federal supervisors is clear: maintain the status quo." He goes on and says, "President Trump has created more jobs in the private sector than the furloughed federal workforce. Now that we are shut down, not only are we identifying and eliminating much of the sabotage and waste, but we're finally working on the president's agenda." There is so much in this. There's even more in that. So this is a Daily Caller article that I'd like to share with you. And when we return, I'm just not sure which way I'm going to go, because I want to talk about William Barr. I want to talk about what's happened to Congressman Steve King. It's got me boiling, to tell you the truth. I'm furious about what the House under Kevin McCarthy has just done to Congressman Steve King. Stripped him of all committee assignments as though he's some sort of a criminal. I'll be back to talk about it. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Every day in preborn centers across the country, young women in crisis find refuge. Here's Roxy, nurse director for Preborn at the Crisis Pregnancy Center in Southern California.
A lot of them come to us and they feel rejected, they feel alone, they're in a crisis situation, they don't know what to do, they don't know where to start. We believe that sharing the compassionate love of Jesus Christ is what really makes what we do work.
Through love and compassion, young women facing tough situations get to meet Jesus Christ and their unborn baby on ultrasound.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies' lives that were spared. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com.
Our concern about 13 Reasons Why has not diminished. If you've signed the AFA petition to Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, then you've probably heard the story of Anna Bright, who killed herself after binge-watching the show. But did you know she wasn't the first, nor the last? Other young people have been influenced by this program and have taken their own lives. Netflix says they want to stimulate conversations about taboo topics like teen suicide, but they still refuse to have a conversation with the American Family Association about the dangers of their show. Please pray that God will change Mr. Hastings' mind so that he pulls 13 Reasons Why before another life is lost. Look for the AFA action alerts with information you can email and share on social media so that others can sign the petition too by visiting afa.net. Every vulnerable teen is another reason why.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
CNN's K-File published a scathing investigation of Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. When she was a teenager, the Congresswoman worked with her father to oppose same-sex marriage. She also defended her mother from militant LGBT activists, another big no-no. Years later, Congressman Gabbard apologized, eventually embraced the LGBT agenda. But that did not seem to matter to CNN. Nor did it seem to matter that tens of millions of Americans believe marriage is between one man and one woman. CNN and the Democrats want you to believe that anyone who believes in traditional marriage is anti-gay. They hate gay people. It's ludicrous. It's a lie. But what do you expect from religious bigots? Congresswoman Gabbard just experienced what many of us on the right have been dealing with for years. Anyone who refuses to conform to the ideology of the left will be punished. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I just teased a few minutes ago that something really bad happened last night, and I'm furious about this. When I was president of CWA, one of the congressmen I got to know best was Congressman Steve King from Iowa, who I personally love and admire. I've known Steve several decades. I've talked to him about immigration. I've talked to him about life. I've talked about him about all kinds of things. I have never, ever, ever, ever seen in him any kind of racism. He talks about Western civilization. He's a very smart man. He knows about Western civilization. Most people don't. You know, they used to teach Western civilization in school so that people understood what that meant. Yes, Western civilization happened to be mostly white. And for some reason now, the race baiters in our culture and the ones that want to change the whole nature of this country really want to make the case that embracing and thinking that Western civilization is good is racist. Western civilization was based on the Judeo-Christian teachings. It just was. It gave freedom to man. It made societies flourish. And we used to study that and be proud of our civilization, but not anymore. And thus the New York Times comes out with this article claiming that Congressman King is a racist. And they make their case. And so what happened as a result of that? Can you imagine? I just can't think. The Republicans came out in defense of Steve King, who they've served with for a long time. And they know he's not a racist, right? So they defended him, right? Oh, well, no, not so much. Kevin McCarthy, in his statement announcing the decision, called King's comments beneath the dignity of the party of Lincoln and the United States. And they stripped him of all committee assignments. Let's see. Not to be seconded, Mitch McConnell said there's no place in the Republican Party, the Congress, or the country for an ideology of racial supremacy of any kind. Mitt Romney, that bastion of integrity, called for King to resign. And on it goes. I want to read to you, I'm hoping to have Congressman King on the air, and we'll have a longer discussion of this, but I want to read to you what Congressman King said, what he wrote in response to what the New York Times wrote. He said, Leader McCarthy's decision to remove me from committee is a political decision that ignores the truth. The truth is as follows. One of my quotes in a New York Times story has been completely mischaracterized. Here's the context I believe accurately reflects my statement. In a 56-minute interview, we discussed the changing use of language in political discourse. We discussed the worn-out label racist and my observation that other slanderous labels have been increasingly assigned to conservatives by the left, who injected into our current political dialogue such terms as Nazi, fascist, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization. How did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization just to watch Western civilization become a derogatory term in political discourse today? Clearly, I was only referencing Western civilization classes. No one ever sat in a class listening to the merits of white nationalism and white supremacy. When I used the word that, it was in reference only to Western civilization and not to any previously stated evil ideology, all of which I have denounced. My record as a vocal advocate for Western civilization is nearly as full as my record in defense of freedom of speech. Ultimately, I told him, you have to do what you have to do, and I will do what I have to do. I will continue to point out the truth and work with all the vigor that I have represented, that I have to represent the 4th District Iowans for the last 2 years. You know, what's happening here, from my perspective, Steve King has been a thorn in the side of Republican leadership, certainly on immigration, for decades. He's been a thorn in their side in many other ways. He's a hardliner on life, on the issue of life. He has held them accountable. He has been relentless. And this is their chance to get rid of another icky, troublesome conservative. You think they're sorry that Dave Brat lost his race? Really? They are delighted. And if they can limit Steve King and limit his influence in the House and even get rid of him totally, even better. So I can tell you that the New York Times and the Washington Post now, and now the Republican leadership has done their bit to rid this world and this Congress of Steve King. Steve King's still there. The people of Iowa will have to decide what to do, but the spin is so strong. You see how this happens. They just destroy people by inference, by twisting their words. I'm furious, to be honest with you. I truly am furious about this. All right. Well, I'm going to change the subject because we have a lot more to talk about. We have a guest joining us in just a second. And you know that the ever-busy New York Times and Washington Post were busy last weekend, pointing out that the FBI put the president under a counterintelligence investigation just right after he fired James Comey. And so James Comey actually said this. You have to hear it. Let's listen.
So what are the Russians doing in the Oval Office? One, as a counterintelligence person, I'm thinking that's crazy without any Americans being present, one. And two, the pretense is melting away. The bit about you were fired because of how you handled the email investigation is melting away. You were fired because of the Russia investigation.
Yeah, did you hear that? That was an ABC prepared piece. And so Comey himself, in this interview with George Stephanopoulos, is inferring that he was fired because he was investigating President Trump for his connections to Russia. Not because he, you know, did anything wrong. James Comey's such an upstanding person. He would never, remember how much integrity they told us he had. So, you see, he could never have been fired for cause. It had to be because he was investigating, the president for his connections with Vladimir Putin. I could go on, but I will introduce our next guest, Sidney Powell. is a former federal prosecutor. She's a veteran of 500 federal appeals. She's also a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. She's the author of this great book called Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. And I've asked Sydney to join us again this morning to talk about all of these incredible things. Sydney, thank you, and good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. All right. So, Sydney, let's talk first of all about your perspective on the revelations from the New York Times and the Washington Post that the FBI opened this counterintelligence investigation on the president. I'd just like to know your thoughts about that.
Well, first of all, there are no revelations there at all. It's just simply recycled and rehashed old fake news. We know from everything that's come out in the last 2 years that they started all that. Frankly, I think back along the time he rode the escalator down and announced that he was going to run for president, because if you go back and look at the decision of the FISA court, the super secret intelligence court, it's heavily redacted, but the court came out with the decision about 18 months ago and just lays into the FBI for Comey having given unlimited access to raw intelligence information, raw data on all Americans to three private contractors, beginning as early as, if not before, 2015. And I think, this is speculation, but I'm pretty sure that it was Fusion GPS and probably CrowdStrike, and I don't know who the third one was. But the day after Admiral Rogers discovered all this and shut off their access, the wife of Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS runs over to the White House. So that's why I think one of them is Fusion GPS. And I think they were mining that database for political opposition research, and Nellie Orr was using that information to create the what became known as the Steele dossier, and they simply used Christopher Steele to recycle all that information and put it in what became known as the Steele dossier that led to the bogus FISA warrants. So, I mean, this was all created and crafted and carefully orchestrated by Brennan and Comey and the small group at the FBI and the National Security Division of the Department of Justice. They've been working on this and ran it as a counter-intel op from the get-go, with the lures they ran against the Trump campaign from overseas and all of it. It was very, very well orchestrated and run.
Sydney, how is it? I mean, this is so frustrating to Americans. You and I understand that. You know more detail than I, and I follow this, so I know more detail than most people listening, but my listeners know a lot more than most people. So we follow this, and we know this. We can see this with our own eyes. It's very transparent. When you hear Comey now, he's really made a fool of himself. I don't think people trust him anywhere. We know McCabe has been exposed. So has Peter Strzok and his girlfriend, Lisa Page. This has all been exposed, and we can see with our own eyes the corruption. And we can see with this last release of information even how more entangled the FBI was really, I think, instigating a coup on the duly elected president of the United States. You and I can see that. So why is it then that nothing is done to anyone, that the perpetrators of the, a couple of people have lost their jobs at the FBI, you could say that. But besides that, really, is nothing is being done, as far as we know, to bring any of these people to justice. In fact, we have this attempt to protect Robert Mueller at all costs. His investigation must continue, be funded. Why is that, Sydney?
I'm with you, Sandy. I mean, it's driving me absolutely nuts, although at this point I think it's gone far enough. It probably needs to finish up. There would be what I call a shift storm if it were to be shut down at this point, so it's probably best to let it finish. He's going to have to find no Russia collusion, because enough people have been looking over his shoulder and enough has come out that everyone can see that there is no there, as Peter Strzok said in his text message before he even went over to special counsel's office. Of course, then we also have, Mr. Mueller destroying Peter Stroke's cell phone, having it completely wiped after Mr. Stroke left his employ and after Mr. Mueller had been notified that there was such bias in the text messages on Stroke's other phones that he apparently felt like he needed to wipe those phones. It's absolutely ridiculous. He's prosecuted people for obstruction of justice for far less. I mean, I was outraged about that. I've got an article in the Daily Caller about Mueller destroying evidence because those phones, Stroke's and Page's special counsel office cell phones, should have been treated as criminal evidence and put in evidence bags just like any evidence in forensic evidence in any criminal case.
Hey, you
and
know,
anybody
Cindy,
else hey, would have been prosecuted for it.
Well, that reminds me, does that not sound just like what Comey did in the so-called Clinton investigation? Where laptops were destroyed and information, you know, returned. I mean, it's the exact same pattern. I mean, honestly, could you please explain to me how James Comey and Robert Mueller feel that they're doing anything righteous by breaking the law so blatantly, each of them in their own roles, entrusted roles as servants of the Justice Department? How could they justify that in their own minds?
They are so flagrantly narcissistic and elitist, they think only they are qualified to judge other people and run everything, and if they do it, it's right.
I want to play just for a second. I was really interested. Jonathan Carl was on ABC, and he commented on the Mueller report, I thought, in an amazing way. Sydney, I wanted you to hear it. It's a clip, too. Let's play it.
Well, look, I mean, the story in the New York Times was an extraordinary reflection of the level of distrust between the FBI leadership and the president and how suspicious the president's behavior was, that they actually were to the point of investigating
the letters about firing Comey, the interview with Lester Holt.
Yes. And actually going to the point of investigating whether or not effectively the president was a Russian agent. But what I am getting is that this is all building up to the Mueller report and raising expectations of a bombshell report. And there have been expectations that have been building, of course, for over a year on this. But people who are closest to what Mueller has been doing, who have interacted with the special counsel, cautioned me that this report is almost certain to be anticlimactic. That if you look at what the FBI was investigating in that New York Times report, look at what they were investigating, Mueller did not go anywhere with that investigation. He has been writing his report in real time through these indictments, and we have seen nothing from Mueller on the central question of, was there any coordination, collusion with the Russians in the effort to meddle in the elections, or was there even any knowledge on the part of the president or anybody in his campaign? What we've certainly seen over and over again is that people around the president, first of all, have been willing to lie to investigators and had their own dealings with Russians, had their own agendas with Russians. Manafort was trying to get paid for his work on behalf of Ukraine. Flynn had his own dealings. But it has not added up to anything of the central question. Again, was there anybody, was the Trump campaign aware of or coordinating with the Russians in their effort to meddle with the election? So far, there's been nothing on that.
It was Jonathan Carl on ABC. My guest is Sydney Powell. Sydney, we just have a minute before the break here, but we have the Washington Post declaring in a headline that there was no Russian influence in the election in 2016. There was no detailed interference. Then we got Jonathan Carl on ABC telling us that the Mueller report's going to be anticlimactic. What's going on here, you think?
Well, clearly they must be realizing that there is no there in terms of the original thing. And the FBI, when they opened that file, they were covering their own rear ends because they'd been trying to generate this from the get-go. They'd had the investigation going, and this was just their opportunity once Comey was gone and McCabe was in place to officially open it so they could keep it going.
Sydney Powell, my guest, and Sydney, stay with me. And when we come back, a really big event is happening in Washington because, as you know, the president has appointed a new attorney general, and he starts the hearing today, this morning, in Washington, D.C. It's William Barr. So who is William Barr, and should we be concerned or should we be excited? We're going to talk about that. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Esther, a young girl, became queen of the Persian Empire when Israel was subject to Persian rule. A wicked man named Haman tried to get the king to exterminate all Jews. Esther, a Jew herself, was queen when this genocidal conspiracy was brought to bear. But her uncle Mordecai put her royal position in perspective. Perhaps God made you queen just for this very moment, to intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. Like Esther, perhaps God gave you the platform, position, and influence you have for this very moment, to stand against darkness. Perhaps you were born for such a time as this.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Tarrant County Republicans in Texas voted to keep a Muslim as their vice chairman. Did they do the right thing? The key issue here is not religion, but ideology. The ideology of the Muslim religion is utterly incompatible with the classic Judeo-Christian values on which America was built. There is no room in the Islamic faith for freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of association, or civil rights for women. A Christian can be a Christian first and an American second because America was founded on the values he embraces as a follower of Christ. But a man cannot be a devout Muslim and a patriotic American at the same time unless he first renounces his allegiance to the Islamic faith. If the Muslim in Texas has not done this, then Republicans there did indeed make a mistake.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here. And I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In a tweet on Sunday, President Trump threatened Islamist Turkey, promising devastating economic sanctions if it attacked Kurds inside Syria. It would appear he has correctly concluded that the Turks are allies no more and will be pursuing policies reflecting that reality. It's high time. After all, under the Sharia supremacist Erdogan regime, Turkey has repeatedly demonstrated that it is playing for the other team, buying advanced weapons from Russia and China, violating sanctions to trade with Iran, pushing migrants into Europe, threatening Israel, and enabling ISIS. A principal concern about Mr. Trump's decision quickly to withdraw the small contingent of U.S. special forces on the ground in Syria was the prospect that the Turks would see it as a green light to crush our Kurdish allies there. Here's hoping that the threat of devastating U.S. economic sanctions will prevent that from happening. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
According to prepared remarks released today, the nominee for attorney general said of the Mueller report, quote, "My goal will be to provide as much transparency as I can consistent with the law. I will make those judgments based solely on the law and will let no personal, political or other improper interests influence my decision." Today, the ACLU said it's pressing senators to explore Barr's position on presidential authorities and mass data collection.
They have to vigorously question him about his views on executive power, on what he thinks the limits of the president's power are, and how he will defend the Fourth Amendment. You know, whether he will really scale back surveillance programs that we know raise significant constitutional and privacy concerns.
Yeah, not so much worried about Mueller or what William Barr might do about all of this out-of-control Justice Department FBI nonsense, not so much worried about that. I am worried about this. William Barr is the appointee by President Trump. Let me just tell you, he was an attorney general under President Herbert Walker Bush's administration. He also served he served in the Reagan White House from 1982 and 1983. He allegedly has amassed a wealth of legal and executive experience. Kerry Severino, a good friend of mine, is the one writing what I'm referencing this from. She says the Barr is known for his independence and ferocity. And a lot of people are saying good things about him, but I look at the names saying good things about him. I see Ted Olson. I don't think I'd want his endorsement, and I see people like Pat Leahy saying he would probably be a good independent voice for America. Those are red flags to me, but there are a lot more red flags, most of them raised by Lindsey Graham. And before I ask Sydney to comment on this, I want to point to another article in Fox that just came out a few minutes ago. Trump Attorney General nominee Bill Barr, swamp master or destroyer? Sydney is a former federal prosecutor. Her book is Exposed the Corruption in the Department of Justice, called License to Lie. So, Sydney, do you think Bill Barr is a swamp master or a destroyer?
I wish I knew the answer, Sandy. I've heard nothing but good things about his integrity and his reputation writ large. I think he's a brilliant guy of outstanding character, but I've also heard he's a good friend of Robert Mueller, and if there were one thing that concerns me the most, that would be it.
Yeah, let me just jump in, because Lindsey Graham has reported that in his private moments with William Barr told him that they had been very close friends, that Robert Mueller had attended both of his girls' weddings, that William Barr's wife and Robert Mueller's wife attended Bible study together. He's publicly said that he would not, I believe he said, actually stated to Graham that he would not interfere with the investigation. He believes it's very valid. Fill in the blanks. So, Sydney, to me, I mean, how does this happen again? Really? Should an attorney general nominee say that he would not interfere with a special? Should he just, like, hold his powder and wait and see what happens? Should he declare up front that he supports the investigation?
Well, I think there would be a massive blowback were he to say anything much different than that. I don't know if he could get confirmed if he said anything much different than that. I mean, were it I would have at least said, you know, I'm going to expect an update from Mr. Mueller, and we'll go from there. But you know, my preference, of course, would have been that it be somebody that wasn't from Washington and had there as few swamp connections as possible. But here is where we are, and like I said, it's hard to get somebody that knows the Justice Department that hasn't been there in a long time, and I don't know what to tell you, Sandy.
Let me read the exact quote from the letter that William Barr sent to Lindsey Graham, who is now the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He says, "I have known Bob Mueller personally and professionally for 30 years, and I have the utmost respect for him and the important work he is doing. I will follow the special counsel regulations scrupulously, and in good faith I will allow Bob Mueller to complete his investigation." I suppose, you know, one could argue, as you kind of said earlier in our conversation, that Mueller's probe is just about over and it doesn't look like he's found anything. I guess in that regard, it's a safe track to take. But the thing that it indicates to me, Sydney, is that by even saying publicly that he believes in the work that Mueller's doing, it doesn't show an inclination to investigate what you've been talking about, how Mueller has destroyed evidence, how he hired political hacks, really, partisans, to be part of an investigative team, by the lives destroyed by these investigations. This is distressing to me, to think that there would never be any justice in what's taken place to people like General Flynn and, you know, fill in the blank, the other people that have been destroyed by Mueller's investigation. I would like to know your thoughts on that.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see how the confirmation hearings go, and whether anybody even asked him if he would consider appointing a special counsel to investigate other things that haven't been investigated.
Cindy, what is your opinion of Matt Whitaker, the acting attorney general right now?
I think he was really, just a place filler without much power. I don't know whether he has started anything. He's just kind of been holding the doors open.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure his hands have been tied. But I would personally, just from little whiffs I've gotten of who he is, I wish they just turned him loose and let him fulfill the position, because he does know what's going on at Justice. He was serving under General Sessions. He knows the lay of the land. He knows the personnel now. And it seems from all indications to me that he would have been willing to actually do something. And, of course, you write about this all the time. I just referred to your article in the Daily Caller on the headline you wrote is, "How Did the Wife of a Mueller Protege End Up Hearing Mueller's Case?" And I did talk about this in detail, so we don't need to repeat all of this. But basically, you reported that Judge Dabney Friedrich, who was the female... I should let you tell the story. So why don't you do that?
Yeah, I called it another swamp rising. Yes, I mean, it's like everybody in the book keeps coming, surfacing back in some way in the Mueller probe, because Dabney Friedrich is married to Matthew Friedrich, who is a longtime colleague of Andrew Weissman, and they have Weissman, of course, is one of Mueller's pit bulls in the Concord case that's in Dabney Friedrich's court. And Dabney Friedrich was chewing out the defense counsel the other day for actually defending his client against the whole bogus charges Mueller's got against the 13 Russians. That whole case should have been thrown out. I mean, the charges, they made up crimes again. They just completely made up crimes. She even admitted early in the proceedings that the case was completely unprecedented. Well, if the case is unprecedented, that means they made up the crimes.
Well, so how does a Judge Dabney Friedrich get appointed by a President Donald Trump, knowing that her husband is a comrade and fellow worker with Bob Mueller and this Andrew Weissman, who, again, is as you said, a pit bull. He has a terrible reputation. You go and enumerate how he destroyed Enron. He and others, along with Mueller, destroyed Enron and 80,000 employees lost their jobs.
I'm sure nobody put those pieces together for President Trump at all.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't either. So how does this keep happening? Because I'm thinking also, too, this may be something you didn't, I bet you did follow this, but remember when the FBI invaded Michael Cohen's office as the private attorney to President, or at least one of the attorneys to President Trump, and went in and did what seemed to be a very out of the ordinary obfuscation of all of his information, and then gave it to a third party who was allegedly going to go through Michael Cohen's private attorney-client files, all of his clients, really. And this third party was supposed to decide which of the stuff in those files that FBI investigators should see. And it turns out that third party who overviewed that was a woman who's real close to George Soros. So how does this keep happening, Cindy? Honestly,
it's just an absolute outrage, Sandy. I mean, the whole system has become so corrupted; it's pathetic. Most Americans don't trust the justice system at all anymore, and who could blame them?
Yeah. So. If this thing were to work the right way, and we were to get an attorney general, by the way, the hearings start this morning, just to remind you, and as you watch, all of you listening, William Barr you'll be able to assess for yourself what you think. I already know what I think. I'm pretty poisoned. I am. I'm pretty poisoned about this. In fact, Sydney, let me point to another article. This is written by Seth Lipsky, and the point is... this is the title, "Let's Not Make an Unconstitutional Deal." And Seth is basically saying that when William Barr is being questioned by Republicans and Democrats, that he has no business making a promise that he will not fire a special prosecutor. And he talks about I did not remember this detail, I bet you do, the Saturday Night Massacre, when President Nixon ordered his new attorney general, Elliot Richardson, to fire the Watergate special prosecutor, Archibald Cox. But what he didn't know was that Richardson had made a deal with senators that in exchange for confirmation, he promised that any special prosecutor would enjoy a truly unique level of independent authority. So he made a private promise. And Seth Lipsky thinks sets a terrible precedent that William Barr should not follow. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the special prosecutor is supposed to work under the authority of the executive, so I tend to agree with that. There's no special prosecutor statute anymore for a good reason. They're kind of an Uber Justice Department, and that should not be. In one sense, they do need some independence, but in another sense, they shouldn't. They should not be a fourth branch of government, which is essentially what Mr. Mueller has become. He's been the tail wagging the dog. He's kept information from the Inspector General of the Department of Justice. He's literally handicapped the Department of Justice for the last 2 years, and the President of the United States, for that matter. It's been a blooming outrage.
It is an outrage.
All over a lie and a hoax. All over a carefully crafted, orchestrated, the most massive frame and abuse of power in the history of the country.
Yes, and that's why when I hear William Barr say he's such a man of integrity and he supports what he's doing, it makes me cringe. It makes me cringe, Sydney. And maybe he'll take it back today when he's being put before the Democratic senators and Republicans, but you know he won't. And you know that the Democrats will be merciless in getting him to even agree to things that he might not even normally agree with. They'll probably even take it further. This is what's happening, though, and I guess we're stuck with it. Now, some are asking the president to withdraw the nomination. If we find out that William Barr won't put a check on Robert Mueller or is not even willing to do that, and I would certainly be in that camp. So how do you see all of this? If it were to play right, Sydney, you think that another special prosecutor should be appointed to investigate justice and FBI, some independent authority to really go after the corruption that we've seen this last few years? Do you think that would be the answer?
Well, if he's the right attorney general, it wouldn't have to be a special prosecutor. It could be done within the Department of Justice.
Do you think there are enough people there in place that are, you know...
He can put them in place. He's going to need to fire some people. I mean, the whole National Security Division probably needs to be cleaned out. The entire upper echelon needs to be cleaned out. The public integrity section probably needs to be cleaned out. I mean, there are a whole lot of heads that need to roll in the Department of Justice. And every prosecutor who's committed an intentional Brady violation needs to be fired.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yes.
Were you happy that that General Sessions finally was fired?
I thought he needed to go. Yes.
So you didn't? I that was a sad day in every regard to me. How that played out, that was a sad episode.
Yeah, I can't say I was happy. I mean, in any way, it was sad all the way around.
Yeah, Sydney, what are you working on today? Tell me in 30 seconds. What can we look forward to next?
Hopefully another article or two coming out sometime soon. And Herbie Silverglade and I are working on a book together on solutions for criminal justice reform.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, then we have to do an interview on that one. That's, by the way, Barr, the nominee, has said that he will support the new criminal justice reform bill. I think he'd opposed it. That was the one good thing I saw in his resume. But he says now, of course, he will. He knows he has to enforce it. But that was just another little interesting sidebar. Sydney Powell, my guest, the author of that book, License to Lie, which you want to see. It's a great book. Sydney, thanks for joining me. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.